Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Next week, we'll celebrate the 100th anniversary of the birth of Donna Reed, an Oscar award-winning actress from Denison, Iowa. Later this hour, I will talk with her daughter, Mary Owen. But first, with the pandemic raging on in Iowa schools around the state, schools continue to educate students in different ways. Most families in Iowa have been able to choose online-only education if they want to. Many districts offer a hybrid option, including smaller socially distanced classroom spaces and online learning in a 50-50 split. And a number of districts have returned to full-time in-person learning. In her Condition of the State address, Governor Kim Reynolds praised a number of Iowa educators, but she also expressed her frustration with the districts who are offering only online or hybrid learning plans.
The vast majority of our schools found a way to safely and responsibly reopen all day, Monday through Friday. It's past time that every district make that happen. As one parent told me, options are good, but if some parents get the option to go 100% online, why don't my kids get the option to be 100% in the classroom? And I agree. So tonight, I'm asking the legislature to immediately send a bill to my desk that gives parents the choice to send their children back to school full time. We can't wait any longer, and our kids can't wait any longer.
Again, that's just a moment from Governor Reynolds' Condition of the State address. The governor also proposed other changes to Iowa schools, and we've already heard that the legislature is taking action. Here to help us understand what's going on is Iowa Public Radio's Grant Gerlach. Hello, Grant.
It's good to be back with you, Charity.
Well, thank you so much. And I want to start with that proposal to move to 100% in-person learning if that's what families choose. And first of all, the governor said most districts in the state have found a way to offer that. Give me some context there. I mean, she's lumping all the districts together, but we're talking about different kinds of districts around the state, right?
Yeah, I think you would find primarily it's smaller districts that have that option for full-time in-person learning, although there are some larger districts that have gone that way as well, notably West Des Moines and some of the other Des Moines metro districts. If they haven't already made that move, they're starting to move that way. And part of that, I think, is that districts are starting to see the writing on the wall, that this is where the governor is going, and so they're trying to get ahead of things.
How are districts responding to this? I mean, there are a number, again, of these larger districts that have continued to offer hybrid learning as the in-person learning option. If the governor requires an option to offer 100% in-person learning, there can't be three options. You can't do online, hybrid, and in-person learning. We just don't have that many classrooms. We don't have that many teachers. How are the districts that are offering hybrid learning responding?
So there are some districts that have been offering hybrid that are moving to make it a full-time version of hybrid. But I think a lot of schools kind of saw something like this happening in the second half of the year. You know, when the school year first started, and there were so many reservations at that time about how school could happen in the first place, that a lot of districts wanted to move into it carefully and see if they could buy some time at the beginning of the year and then really put more emphasis on in-person learning toward the end of the year to try to catch up on lost learning before the year was done. The governor's initial rules around return to learn that required at least an option for 50% in person made it so that they couldn't ease into things maybe the way they wanted to, and they had to provide that hybrid option. And now they're in a position where really they're expecting that they're going to have to move this way, where they provide an option for 100% in person. And like you said, having all online, half online, and all in person is not a tenable situation, especially in like middle schools and high schools. Teachers are stretched super thin trying to cover online classes and in-person classes often at the same time. So they're being put in a position by the governor and the legislature at this point, because we're expecting this to move forward pretty easily, where they're going to have to move forward to this point. It's something they may have been planning for doing at some point, but they were really hoping that it would be under better circumstances in terms of, you know, viral spread overall.
Right. That was my next question, is what has changed since the beginning of the year? We don't have more testing. We don't have vaccines for teachers yet. There are lots and lots of things that are not in place. It seems like we're in a very similar situation to what we were in at the beginning of the school year.
Yeah, except right. Compared to the beginning of the year, the pandemic is much worse in Iowa than it was. Not as bad as it was there toward the fall in November, but still, you know, we're having near 2,000 new cases per day, oftentimes dozens of deaths reported each day, and still near 500 hospitalizations around the state. So it's still a very bad situation with the virus. What has improved just sort of logistically for schools is since winter break, there aren't as many teachers and staff members that were on quarantine. You know, that time off allowed a lot of those people to come back on the job. And the quarantine rules have changed, so they don't have to be out a full 14 days like they used to. It's shorter than that now. So it may be easier for them to work around those quarantine rules and keep classrooms open longer than it was before.
Well, and that's been an incredible challenge for a lot of districts, is just keeping teachers in the classroom. We also need to note that we have lost at least 16 educators to COVID-19 since the pandemic struck. But having substitutes available for teachers who are sick or quarantining, that's something that a lot of districts are having a really hard time doing, even though the governor lowered the standards for substitute teachers, right?
Yeah, it's been hard for them to keep enough people available to keep those classrooms covered. So you have situations where even the superintendents themselves are covering classrooms or riding along on buses and that kind of thing. The governor's rules kind of making it easier to qualify as a substitute didn't help as much as maybe she hoped it would. And in these districts, when we had more than 50 districts who had online learning waivers back before the holidays, it was largely because of the problems staffing classrooms. It wasn't even just the issues with the virus itself. It was logistics and staffing.
As legislators in Des Moines are responding to this call and putting together legislation, are there also proposals for making sure that teachers have the opportunity to get vaccinated or other safety measures?
That's not part of the full-time in-person proposal that was just released yesterday. It does not include contingencies for waiting for vaccines for teachers. It doesn't say you have to wait until the viral spread is below a certain level. It just says when this is passed, schools have to provide the option for full-time in-person learning. And if they don't, it won't count toward their instructional time for the academic year.
There's not a lot of substance to the bill. As it moves forward, are we expecting that it will get a little more complicated, get a little more substantive?
Well, I wonder if it will, because a couple of things that aren't clear to me. One is whether the state would still follow the current waiver process for approving a switch to online learning. Right now it says that schools would have to have this full-time option unless the governor issues a proclamation based on a disaster proclamation, which is what she did to set up the current system where
the county spread has to be at least 15% or higher. That's the guideline anyway. So it's not clear if under these rules if that would continue or if they would just have to wait until the governor gives approval to go online across the state at some point.
How quickly could this become law?
It could happen pretty quickly. The first subcommittee on the Senate side is scheduled for a Monday afternoon. It has to go through the committee process and then pass both chambers. But it could happen pretty quickly. I mean, I'm just guessing here, but possibly by the end of next week.
Wow.
And it's set to take effect immediately.
What do you think is going to happen? I mean, obviously, there are many districts that have already made this move. There are other districts that really don't feel like they can do it safely. Are we going to see another round of lawsuits and court cases?
Yeah, that could happen. There could be more lawsuits. But if this is a new law being passed by the legislature, I'm not sure if they would have much of a chance with lawsuits. There are a lot of reservations. One is, like I just said, it takes effect immediately. I know districts like Des Moines were looking for some transition time. They're trying to hold out as long as they can until the legislature takes this step. And so they're looking for some time to make that move. They're preparing for it, but they're trying to look for some transition time there. So that's something that could be part of the discussion going forward. And also, like I said, will there be a stronger emphasis on vaccinating teachers and staff members before this takes place? They're not really allowing a lot of time for that to happen.
Yeah. Well, Grant Gerlach, thank you so much. And I know there are a lot of other proposed changes to how schools operate in Iowa as well. So I hope you'll come back and talk to us about those in the near future, too. Thanks a lot.
A long list. I'll come back.
It is a long list. Iowa Public Radio's Grant Gerlach. We're talking right now about a proposal from the state legislature that could move very quickly to require schools, all districts in Iowa, to offer 100% in-person learning. Coming up in just a moment, we'll get a response from the Iowa State Education Association, and we'll talk about what research shows us about how COVID-19 responds in a school environment. This is Talk of Iowa.
The way Iowans consume news has changed a lot since the coronavirus pandemic hit in 2020. But people here still need to know what's going on in the state every day. What are leaders saying?
The virus isn't going away until we have a vaccine.
How are medical professionals reacting, and how is it affecting hospital staff and schools?
Those weekends where you are on the phone and sending emails and, you know, dealing with people with a very emotional issue has been really hard.
I'm Clay Masters. In 2021, Iowa Public Radio is starting a podcast called Here First. It's a quick daily show for your work week that catches you up on state news as you begin your day. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters.
Most of the improvement in the unemployment picture comes from more than 90,000 Iowans no longer looking for work.
Find out when high-profile politicians are in the state.
Back at the state fair!
Learn about what's going on in state government and discover Iowans you might not hear about otherwise.
This is the first time I've spoken with a woman without documents who's also unafraid of sharing her story on the radio.
Subscribe to Iowa Public Radio's Here First wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in just a few minutes, we will remember Oscar-winning actress Donna Reed, originally from Denison, Iowa. Right now, we're talking about a proposal that is moving quite quickly, apparently, through the state legislature to require all school districts in the state of Iowa to offer 100% face-to-face, in-person learning for any student, any family who wants it. And we've been talking about what the proposal is. Now I want to get a reaction from Mike Baranek. He is president of the Iowa State Education Association. And Mike, I'm sure you and your members are closely watching what's going on in Des Moines right now. Can you give me your reaction?
First of all, good morning, Charity. Thank you for inviting me to speak this morning.
Really appreciate the opportunity. Well, yes, the Iowa State Education Association is paying close attention to all of the bills that are being presented at the Capitol, and we are reading the documents carefully and making sure that we understand each nuance of each bill.
So I want to, as I mentioned with Grant, there are so many things going on right now with regard to education and so many proposals that the governor talked about, even just in her condition of the state address about private school vouchers and allowing open enrollment in much broader ways. And I want to get to those on another program, but let's focus specifically on this requirement to move schools to 100% in-person learning, if that's what families want. What is your response specifically to that?
Well, we want all of our kids to be in schools learning. Our educators want their students to be there in the classrooms learning and growing and achieving. But we expect that our schools follow basic guidelines as established by the CDC in terms of community spread. What does that virus look like in your communities, and how is that virus spread affecting the number of individuals being infected? We also expect that the districts utilize the mitigation examples that need to be set forth, face masks, physical distancing, making sure that our schools are disinfected, that we allow for the classroom environment in the entire building to be a safe environment for everyone who attends. And so following guidelines that are established by the CDC and what we've recommended would help allow districts to have full in-person learning. As Mr. Gerlach had mentioned, we have had many schools that have already been in person, some of them since the beginning of the school year. However, Charity, we still have schools in our state that do not require face masks. And I understand when the governor says that it's hard to mandate face masks across the state, but our school systems can mandate that. And where districts have implemented using face masks, students have adapted and have been able to acclimate themselves to the in-learning environment, and that certainly helps to stop the spread of the virus.
There are a lot of things that we don't know about COVID-19 in our schools. There are not state standards for how school districts report their COVID-19 numbers, and there isn't transparency in every district about these numbers. We also have some problems with contact tracing in Iowa. Community spread is so high that contact tracing is ineffective in some areas of the state. It is non-existent. So as you think about this proposal and as members of the Iowa State Education Association think about this proposal, what are your concerns about that? And what would you like to see happen to make you feel like a mandate like this is possible?
Well, Cherry, you are absolutely correct. Our data that has been put forth by our state agencies has not been as transparent as it should be. Contact tracing has been quite an issue. Our school administrators have been working incredibly hard in concert with the classroom teachers to make sure that they're understanding who is coming to school with the virus, where those students have been, who they've been in contact with, and putting that on top of just the daily routine of making sure the school works and is functioning and is educating our students has been an arduous task. I've talked to educators across the state who are spending hours doing contact tracing, and our public health system in our counties has been stretched as well because their numbers of employees have been reduced over the years. And so the whole issue of contact tracing, documenting who is quarantined in our schools, has been one that has been a major concern, and it has really allowed for students and educators to be in schools that may not need to be there or should be there because they are asymptomatic, but they still have the ability to spread the virus in their communities.
Going forward, it looks like this is moving rapidly in the legislature. Is there a message that you'd like to send to Des Moines and to families?
Well, it's incredibly important that we have our kids in school. But I think this is an opportunity that we can also work in conjunction with the distribution of the vaccine into our communities. It's incredibly important that everyone who enters a building to work there, whether it be a bus driver, a food and nutrition worker, a classroom teacher, a paraprofessional, an administrator, folks who come from our area education agencies or folks who work in our community colleges that have concurrent enrollment classes, they need to be vaccinated. And so while we understand the importance of making sure that our students are in schools, I think we should slow down and use this opportunity as our educators are being considered in the 1B distribution list, that we wait until we are able to get our individuals who work in our schools vaccinated. It's very important because, as you have seen, Charity, we still have a rampant spread of the virus here in our state. And there are locations which have very high numbers. They exploded before the holiday break. And we are seeing that educators, as Mr. Gerlach had mentioned, their numbers seem of the educators who are in our classrooms, their numbers seem to have gone down. But we've only been in school for a few weeks. And so I anticipate that the number of individuals who need to be quarantined, who have tested positive, will continue to grow as we spend more time in our classrooms, in our school buildings. And according to the CDC, in December, they came out with new guidelines. And they are saying that students have just as much of a likelihood of contracting the virus, but more often than not, they are asymptomatic. But if we bring all of our students back into our schools where we can't physically distance, where we have a hard time making sure that we have the environment clean and healthy, if we bring students back into our classrooms that are asymptomatic, but are carrying the virus, then they're taking it home to their families. They are taking it home to their communities. And our numbers won't go down.
Well,
and so
Mike,
it's incredibly important. I'm sorry, Charity.
Yeah, no, I just thank you so much for giving us your perspective. I have another guest that I want to bring into the conversation because she has some data about how COVID-19 spreads in a school environment. So, Mike Baranek, thank you so much for being here.
Sure. You're welcome. And invite me back anytime, Charity.
Mike Baranek is president of the Iowa State Education Association. And there is still a great deal that's unknown about COVID-19 in our schools. Some people say it doesn't spread in schools. Others believe that it does spread in schools. Iowa doesn't have uniform reporting or contact tracing rules from district to district or county to county. But researchers all over the world are trying to understand how COVID-19 spreads in the school environment. Catherine Strunk is a professor of education policy and director of Education Policy Innovation Collaborative at Michigan State University, and one of the authors of a report from the Calder Center for Longitudinal Data in Educational Research. The study is titled, "To What Extent Does In-Person Learning Contribute to the Spread of COVID-19?" and depends on data collected from Michigan and Washington states. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me today.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And as I mentioned, there are still so many unknowns. So tell me what you set out to find out in this study.
Sure. So as you said, there are so many unknowns, and we've been kind of working in a place of a lack of evidence and a lack of data. We have an Iowa not alone and not collecting this at a central level. So we went to both Washington and Michigan states, and we worked with the Departments of Health and Human Services and Departments of Education there to try to understand what districts were doing. So are they opening in person? Are they opening in some kind of a hybrid fashion, which means that their kids are only there for a couple days a week or only in the mornings or afternoons, or are they staying closed? And we looked at the relationship between being in person in any way, shape, or form with the spread of COVID in the communities surrounding the schools.
Okay, and what did you find? That's the big question.
Yeah, that is the big question. So we don't find evidence that districts that offer in-person schooling contribute to community COVID spread if there are low to moderate levels of pre-existing COVID infections in the surrounding areas. But when there become communities that have higher rates of COVID in the surrounding areas, we do see that schools that are in-person do contribute to community COVID spread.
So give me a definition. What is a low to moderate level? How can we quantify that?
That's a great question. And it's one that we don't really delve into. And the reason we don't try to give that definition is because a couple reasons. One, we have to estimate off of the early fall. And the early fall was happening before the big surge happened in both Washington and Michigan. And so we're kind of estimating out of sample when we say at the higher ranges of the distribution. So we want to be really clear that what we're saying is basically at the top end. So in Michigan, it was about the 95th percentile of the distribution, meaning that only 5% of districts were that high in Michigan in basically like October. And in the 75th percentile in Washington, so about a quarter of the districts were that high. Did we see COVID spread happening when there were schools that were open in the districts? But right now, you know, in many states, there are case rates that are that high in many counties and communities. And we would urge caution in those places that districts are working closely with local health departments to understand how much COVID is spreading, what the rates are like, if the rates are going down or up, and what the best practices might be to bring kids back. For instance, Mr. Burnick was talking about social distancing. You know, we do find in our study that bringing kids back in a hybrid format appears to be more safe than bringing kids back fully in person 5 days a week. And that might be because kids can be more socially distant. They can be 6 feet apart in those areas. We also find that it is the districts that are bringing all the kids back. So we ask districts, you know, what proportion of your kids are coming back to learn in each of these ways? And it is the districts, especially in Washington, where all of the kids are coming back in person, that we see the biggest contributions to COVID spread.
So if I want to look at the district that my kids go to school in and say, okay, is this safe? Is this not safe? Because a lot of parents are going to have to make the hard decision between online-only education or 100% in-person education here in the very near future in Iowa. How do I assess my district?
That is another great question. I'm a parent of two kids in public schools. They're in third grade here in Michigan. And, you know, we're going through this right now. Our public schools are going back hybrid in for February. And my husband and I looked at the county rates and sort of said, these seem like they're going down. This seems like things are safe. They're not at as high of a level as they were, you know, a month ago. And they're sort of getting into the safe range of under 20 or 30 cases per 100,000. Which is what we look at in our paper in Michigan. And it looks like we're good to go in a hybrid format. And so we're sending our kids back. But every parent does have to make that choice. And the thing that I think is incredibly important for everyone to understand is we're not saying that even at lower rates of COVID spread in the community, schools are some magical place where you go in and you just hang up COVID at the door and you walk in and things are safe. In fact, what we're saying is COVID is going to spread inside schools. It's just the way it's going to spread anywhere else that people are, you know, back together in public spaces. However, it doesn't look like when you bring kids back in these ways into schools, it's contributing to spread more than it would already be doing in any kind of other place in the community. So you go to the supermarket, you go to the gym, you go to a restaurant. Those places are also having community spread, and schools aren't doing any more or less than that when you get to levels that are low to moderate.
And looking at the schools that you did study, you mentioned earlier wearing masks or socially distancing. Can you tell us what you learned about how schools can and should be trying to control the spread? We know the spread will happen. How do you control it within a school? What's effective?
Yeah, so I am not a health expert. I'm an education policy expert. And you'd have to talk to the folks in health who could tell you more about that. The only thing we can say from our paper is that it does look like social distancing measures are critically important. But we don't have data about mask wearing. We don't have data about hygiene. And in fact, almost no state is collecting those data in any kind of rigorous, systematic way. And that would be really important for the benefit of the kids and the teachers and the educators inside the schools to understand what districts are and are not requiring that they do for mitigation strategies, and then hopefully health departments could help them work through what they might need to do to be more safe.
All right. So just to recap, you found that COVID-19 does spread in schools, but it's not what we would call a super spreading event. Is that fair to say?
No, we wouldn't say that. What we would say is it does spread in schools at relatively high rates of pre-existing COVID in the community. But if you're at pretty low rates or moderate rates of pre-existing COVID in the community, it doesn't look like schools are spreading it any more than anywhere else would be.
Okay. And so if the district is under that 20 or 30 cases per 100,000, then COVID will spread in the schools, but at a lower rate.
Sure. Exactly.
All right. Well, obviously, there's so much more to learn. Are you continuing to look at these schools? Do you have more questions to answer?
You know, we in Michigan and Washington can't. And in Michigan, part of why is because our governor and Department of Health and Human Services did put out an executive order in mid-November that required high schools to shut their building doors and go remote. And we also had multiple other restrictions put in place in Michigan, like we closed down indoor dining and bars and indoor gyms, things like that. And so with all that happening, we can't really disaggregate if it's in-person or not, lack of in-person schooling driving the fact that Michigan has seen decreases in COVID rates or something else. So we have to stop our study there. But I do know that others in other states are trying to do this. There has been a national study that was just released a few days after ours was that looked at hospitalization rates across the country based on school reopening. And they found very similar results as what we found.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for talking with me and for sharing your research.
Thank you for having me, Charity.
Catherine Strunk, professor of education policy and director of Education Policy Innovation Collaborative at Michigan State University, and one of the authors of a report called To What Extent Does In-Person Learning Contribute to the Spread of COVID-19? They were depending on data collected from Michigan and Washington states. Coming up in just a moment, we will remember iconic actress Donna Reed with her daughter, Mary Owen. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Iowa Republican leaders encourage wearing a mask at the Capitol, but oppose making it a mandate.
We have no way to enforce that, even if we were to say everyone in the caucus has to have a mask.
This worries Democratic leaders.
I'm concerned and want to avoid, you know, turning the legislature into a super spreader event.
Legislative leaders share their goals and concerns, and so does the governor on the podcast Under the Golden Dome. Listen to the new episode now at iowapublicradio.org.